Second case of the day, Hernandez versus Cook County Sheriff's Office.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Terry Galea. I represent the defendants in this matter, who are in the unusual situation of having spent 17 pages of briefing on an issue and being told that they waive that argument. The way I get 17 pages is simple. We had a seven-month-old motion to dismiss, fully briefed. It was our first argument. The Pearson versus Callahan case, talks about that qualified immunity should be raised early in the case and decided early before we get to discovery. That motion sat with no action by the court for 7 months. As the schedule of the case mandated, we came up on the summary judgment timetable. We had to file our summary judgment. Rather than regurgitate those arguments to the court again, we incorporated them into the motion, for summary judgment, and added 11 pages of facts that all support the qualified immunity defense and 2 pages of argument. We applied the cases. We analyzed the cases. We came to the simple conclusion. The simple conclusion is this. This was an inside job.
So, Mr. Goulet, let me ask you a couple of questions about this. If we were to agree with you that there's no waiver here, my first question is whether you think the qualified immunity issue is teed up properly for this court to decide on its own or whether a remand to the district court is necessary, since the district court really didn't give it any attention because of this waiver point. And secondly, I wonder whether you could address, again, on the assumption that we were to agree with you that there's no waiver, whether your primary argument is that the first part of the Saucier-Pearson test hasn't been met, namely no constitutional violation, or whether you're relying more heavily on the second part, no clearly established law.
All right. In reverse order, Judge, I would say that I think we win on both ends of the Saucier test. But to go back to your first question, our research did not find a case directly answering your first question. I would have to default to say that this court's review of the issue on qualified immunity is a de novo review. All facts in the record that would be handled by Judge Guzman at the lower level are there. We already have that there. So if it goes back to Judge Guzman, we believe, rightfully so, if he considers the issue, he will have to find that qualified immunity applies to the situation. Certainly from an expense standpoint, I think there's public policy considerations supporting the idea that this court can go to that issue now. Certainly qualified immunity, again.
Is it your position there are no questions of fact that have to be resolved before you can get this qualified immunity?
Well, I don't think there are any material questions of fact, Your Honor. In moving to the Saucier issue, the fact of the matter is here, and you're going to hear a lot of argument, and certainly a lot of time was spent in the opposing counsel's brief talking about a myriad of things that they thought were wrong, done wrong. But the fact of the matter is we had a very serious investigation.
Well, can I just interrupt and say I think maybe the key word here is material, because the district court finds, and it looks this way to me as well, that there are many, many disputed issues of fact between your clients and the defendants. But whether any of those is material to the qualified immunity defense is a somewhat different issue, since, as I understand it, you've conceded that, I mean, everybody agrees the jailbreak happened. That's indisputable. You've conceded that your clients were upset and spoke about the Remus connection and other ways vented as this is happening. So that's out there. The plaintiffs would like to prove that, but you've conceded it. But
can I address that, Your Honor? Yeah. For purpose of the record of appeal, we don't have the benefit of Tom Kaufman's testimony. He became very sick. Certainly the allegation is that he showed up yelling that this smells of Remus.
But you have to take that.
We're taking that for purposes of the appeal. But the fact of the matter is we did submit an affidavit to the court from Miriam Rentis, who was with him, who said she never heard him say that. So it is disputed for that fact. For purposes of the appeal, though, that is a completely immaterial issue. The fact of expressing a theory as to what happened when you have the most secure area of the jail, where the detainees not only have to get out of a caged enclosure, they have to get out of two security doors. They have to go through a hallway, by the way, beating up other officers as they do that. And then suddenly they have the keys that get into the SWORT command post that were taken into the tier by Darren Gator, who coincidentally was left alone in the tier by two officers who left just before the escape, and with detainees that had a shank that one of the defendants, or now our plaintiffs, knew about and did nothing about. An inside job, that is the first conclusion anybody could raise.
So let me try to clarify, because in the briefing, actually on both sides, there's some confusion, I'll say, between whether the theories that we're playing with are Fourth Amendment-type theories where probable cause to investigate would be an issue or other kinds of things, or whether it's really a pure First Amendment issue, which is actually what I think the plaintiffs are raising, that the reason you picked on them to investigate after this break was not because they had anything to do with anything, but because they were disliked because of their association with Remus.
And isn't that exactly what presents the issues of fact?
I don't think so,
Your
Honor.
The First Amendment issue.
One thing that's not teed up, to use Judge Wood's term, is the issue of the First Amendment claim. We won on that below. The speech that they're claiming, issues with the jail, I mean, that's things that the judge ruled in our favor on that.
Right, that was count two, right.
The fact is, even if the individual civil defendants that we have now had a political animus as to these plaintiffs, and for purposes of appeal, that is something that's out there. The fact of the matter is, it's subsumed by this occurrence. You have a SWORT officer, Darren Gator, who tells investigators that these defendants, or these plaintiffs now in this civil case, were directly involved. That Jones, actually, he was the one that encouraged him on three occasions to get involved in this escape for the very political reason. So my clients may have, if they had some political animus, they don't like that these guys support Remus.
Well, they admit that. I mean, I think they argue that Gavin's statement was made under some form of coercion after a long period of interrogation, et cetera. But
well,
correct me if I'm wrong, I think they admit that Gavin did finger your clients.
Well, he did finger those clients, and we're past that issue, respectfully, Judge, because Darren Gator has been sentenced to 2.5 years in prison.
Right.
For felony charge of
official misconduct. So you're asking us to take judicial notice of that. That's obviously not in the record.
In fact, two efforts to suppress that statement in the criminal court were denied, both in pretrial motions and on the eve of the very trial that happened this summer. Judge Obisch had some very interesting comments about it. He said the motive may have been absurd, but the investigators rightfully were call to question about the political motivations of this escape. So that takes the whole issue about whether there was any political animus before this out of the framework that we should be talking about. And if there was political animus, I would think the record supports, if we thought all along that these guys were opponents to then Sheriff Sheehan, well, when they were making all these complaints that they litter the record with, why did anything happen to him then?
Let me back up, though, back to the First Amendment claim, because I think, you know, the core issue is whether any of these disputes of fact are pertinent to the theory of the case. And I guess you must be saying, almost in a Mount Healthy against Doyle sense, that, yes, there may have been lots of animus against your clients because of the Remus connection, but that no rational trier of fact could find anything but the fact that the escape so overwhelmed whatever that animus was that they were going to be investigated whether they were hated, loved, or anywhere in between.
I think that's true. And the Seventh Circuit's recent Purvis case is right on point on that. The issues as to the investigation, anything that might be complained about that, the fact that there might be some other political things going on. There's a case, it's in the record, where the commissioners come in with the affidavits and at the end and say it was all political. And they try, and the plaintiffs try to construct this by the disputed statement of Dennis Andrews, who's not involved in the investigation after the fact, who has no knowledge as to what's going on with the Cook County Sheriff's Police investigators, the state's attorney's office, says, well, it was political. So what? The fact of the matter was, the escape was political. The political overtones of this escape and the implication of our civil plaintiffs overrides all of that. It makes it immaterial.
Well, you don't even have to argue that the escape was political. All you have to say is that that no rational trier of fact could find the decision to investigate these people was based on anything other than the fact that these six inmates escaped.
Exactly. And it's much more eloquently put than my so what statement, but I absolutely agree with you, Judge.
Hey, just before you sit down, what are we to do with Judge Guzman's statement regarding political retaliation? Quote, the record is rife with genuine issues of material fact.
I think you should take it for what it says. It says the record is rife, but then it doesn't cite a single fact, whether a fact immaterial or not. It's a conclusion without support, Judge, and I respectfully submit.
Isn't it an issue of motivation? Isn't that what the political question is all about?
Well,
why did they do all these things?
Well, the motivation, though, is once you have probable cause, and when Darren Gator's statement comes in.
That applies to the Fourth Amendment, but I don't know what it's got to do with the First Amendment.
I see I'm in with my time. I don't believe the record is rife. I think when a true analysis is made as to the actions of my individual defendants, not the state's attorneys, not the Cook County Sheriff's Police, there is no evidence supporting this.
I'm not suggesting there were comparable incidents to what occurred here.
Yes.
But what if there were? And would it be relevant to have what action were taken against less than responsible officers in the past? I mean, would that kind of history impact in any way, if it does exist? I'm not suggesting it does. Motivation, perhaps?
If the motivation is completely unsupported by other evidence that the investigators rightfully have to respond to, I think you would have a definite issue there. But that's not this case. I'll reserve my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goulet. Ms. Kurtz?
May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Dana L. Kurtz, appearing on behalf of appellees. This court should affirm the district court's denial of summary judgment on qualified immunity, not only on the waiver issue, but also on the basis that this court does not have jurisdiction because there are disputed issues of fact. And there's four reasons why there are disputed issues of fact for which this court does not have jurisdiction. And to go to the case law first, in Levin versus George.
Well, could we actually go to the facts first? Because I have to tell you, I'm not too impressed by the waiver argument, although obviously we'll trace it through. But it would be very helpful for me for you to zero in on exactly which facts you think are disputed and to what issue you find them material.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, Judge Guzman held in both opinions, the one denying summary judgment and the one denying...
I read that. I want you to tell me about the facts. You know more about the facts than I do, I'm sure.
Yes,
so
Judge.
So if you, I hope, if you will just zero in on which facts, which Judge Guzman does not spell out in his order, which facts you think are disputed and to what issue do you find them material?
Judge, there are numerous facts in which they're... Judge Guzman found there was direct evidence. And those that constitute direct evidence are Kaufman's statement, this smells of Remus. This is a Remus set up before any investigation.
And why is that material if we all agree that six inmates escaped and that the names of these officers were given by Mr. Gator?
Judge, the names of all of the plaintiffs were not given by Darren Gator. The only evidence in the record...
But the others were on duty that night, weren't they?
Officer Davis and Officer Bailey. Officer
right.
Davis, the merit board found that there was no cause to terminate him.
Sure, and I just... I find it very difficult to figure out exactly what your complaint is. Is your complaint that your clients were investigated? Is it your complaint that there was disciplinary action taken? Do you think this is that having them go through the investigatory process was done simply to retaliate against them for their support of Remus, or was the investigation okay and then something else was wrong? I mean, what are you saying?
Judge, it's not the fact of the investigation alone.
So you concede that the investigation was okay?
The fact that they were doing an investigation based on the escape, yes. But what
Of your clients, are you conceding that it was acceptable to investigate your clients?
They should have investigated everyone, including the Post 3 and Post 7 officers that opened the door of the command post.
Would you please just answer? I mean, you have a number of clients, Hernandez, Rodriguez, Jones, McNo, Bailey, and Davis. They were questioned after this incident and went through an investigatory process. Are you agreeing that it was that no one's First Amendment rights were violated by the Cook County authorities' decision to question them and investigate them?
That is correct based on investigation. But what happened?
Well, and then actually only two of them are eventually found guilty of violating the general orders, as I recall. The other four are exonerated. And
no.
The suspensions are done with pay.
The suspensions were with pay. They were removed from SORT, which was a specialty unit.
SORT's dissolved, though.
Long after. SORT was not dissolved until November of 2006. They were removed from SORT in February of 2006.
And was their pay the same after they were removed from SORT?
No, they were not given the same. They had overtime opportunity. Their base pay did not change, but the overtime opportunities did. And in the investigation, the docket at 147.5, at 131.213, and docket 147-3 at 78, there's evidence in the record that the sheriff's investigators, when they questioned the plaintiffs that night, the next day, when they were held, detained, criminally investigated, the sheriff's investigators said they asked them where their political affiliation was and which candidate they were supporting for sheriff. Officer Jones testified, and this can be found in the record at docket 147-7 at page 174. He testified that when the investigators were, quote-unquote, investigating this, they never asked him about the escape.
Okay, can I then try to clarify one more level? You are not contesting that there was an investigation. Your First Amendment claim is based on the methodology of the investigation or the kinds of questions that were asked?
The fact that they were investigated criminally, Your Honor, which other officers were not, who were not on SORT.
So now you are saying that there was a problem with the investigation.
Yes, and based upon the evidence in the record and direct statements of the investigators, but also, Judge.
But is there any right for people not to be investigated?
No. The county, the sheriff's office has
either
a right
civilly
to
or criminally, if six violent people have escaped.
No, Judge, they have a right to investigate, but certainly not to hold them for 8 hours, 2 days.
But that's a Fourth Amendment theory. That's not a due process theory, perhaps. That's not a First Amendment theory.
But it's also a First Amendment theory, Judge. And in Rufino, Seventh Circuit case 2000, this court affirmed the denial of summary judgment as to qualified immunity, where guards claimed that they were singled out because of their support for a candidate other than Sheehan. This court, the Supreme Court, has held on numerous occasions the First Amendment looks at whether the action would silence speech. So it's not
So isn't the question whether the fact that your clients were supporting Remus, did that have any causal link to the fact that they were investigated that night for the breakout?
Absolutely, and there's direct evidence in the record. Not only Kaufman's
isn't
statements.
There evidence? I mean, isn't it impossible to think that they wouldn't have been investigated? I mean, yes, they supported Remus, but suppose they'd been zealous DART supporters, wouldn't they still have been investigated?
Judge, the evidence shows that the Post 3 and Post 7 officers who opened the door, who were not on SORT, who were not Remus supporters, were not criminally investigated. They were not suspended. They were not accused of participating in this escape.
And Gator
Were they named by Officer Gator?
There was no mention in the statement that defense counsel refers to as Gator's statement. Only Jones was mentioned in that statement. And the problem with that statement is it's double hearsay, if not triple hearsay.
But that doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, but did Gator implicate your client, I guess, in the escape?
Greenstein referred to in her handwritten statement that Gator told her that Jones had a conversation with him about this escape. That's the only on another page, Sergeant Rodriguez was standing in the room when some conversation occurred. That's the only evidence in the record. And this court should look at the fact that Judge Guzman found that the defendants did not comply with Rule 56.1 and struck several statement of facts.
Well, wait a minute. You can address this. On page 12 of the Cook County brief, I'll call it, it says, Gator named plaintiffs Bill Jones, Roberto Rodriguez, and Gene Michno as assisting him or of having advanced knowledge of the escape, citing document. Gator identified plaintiffs Marvin Bailey and Richard Davis as allowing inmates to engage in prohibited conduct. So that's why I think we've gotten the impression that he did name quite a few people.
Right. Judge, he did not.
But these documents just don't say that? I mean, what?
The document only refers, the handwritten statement from Greenstein only refers to Jones and that Rodriguez was in the room. And this is the problem, that defendants argued in their summary judgment brief and referred to, in total, Exhibit 14 and Exhibit 13. Exhibit 14 was over 220 pages. Exhibit 13 was over 1,500 pages. And Judge Guzman found that he struck numerous statement of facts based upon defendant's failure to comply.
But he doesn't tell, his opinion is very unhelpful in terms of which facts he does find are properly in the record and which are not.
Judge, he cites specifically in his order, the docket 226 is his order denying summary judgment. He cites specifically paragraphs of defendant's statement of facts. And here's the distinction. Defendants in their motion for summary judgment in their statement of facts, for example, paragraph 40, which is one that Judge Guzman specifically struck. The investigation showed that Sergeant Hernandez, this is what they contended, that Sergeant Ivan Hernandez violated Cook County rules and regulations, general orders, and they go on. And they cite to Exhibit 13. That's it. 1,500 pages. And then in their brief before this court, they cite Exhibit 13 and then give you specific page references. Page 2,763 through 65.
Well, that obviously can't be a consecutive pagination because you've said there is it wasn't more than 2,000 pages. It must be Bates numbers or something.
Correct. But that's over 200 pages into, if not more, into Exhibit 13. After the first 100 pages, even the pig hunting for truffles would give up, to cite Judge Posner's case.
Yeah, we've heard that quote a lot of times, actually. It may seem fresher from your standpoint.
And, Judge, to give you the case law, Waldridge versus American Hosh Corporation, since 1994, this court has been upholding district court's decisions, striking 56.1 statements on both sides, and finding that the district court has discretion to hold the parties to a strict compliance of Rule 56.1. We could not find one case where this court reversed the district court, where the district court strictly enforced Rule 56.1 on the parties' counsel. So that's the first issue of the disputed issues of fact for which this court has no jurisdiction. Judge Guzman also, in both opinions, reference the direct evidence. And in addition to the Kaufman statement, one of the things that defense counsel did not tell you about Director Andrews, who is named as a defendant in this case, he signed off on the administrative charges. They were not only investigated criminally, but they were investigated administratively for participating in the escape.
Well, wouldn't perhaps I'm not familiar with the procedures completed in this case, but I guess if one were being investigated criminally, a subset of that would be administratively also, wouldn't it? I mean, what should we draw from the fact that they would do both? If one was the subject of a criminal investigation.
Right, and it doesn't always mean both, Judge, because the Post 3 and Post 7 officers were not brought up on administrative charges.
Well, I mean, that is a stronger point for you than the other. I mean, it seems to me that, again, trying to keep separate, you know, your blending in of all this Fourth Amendment stuff to the First Amendment, your fundamental theory has to be that none of this would have happened to your clients had it not been for their political association with Remus. And there are a number of facts that stand in the way of that conclusion. A, the breakout. B, the fact that some of them were on duty. C, the Gator statement. But that has to be your position.
And that is the plaintiff's position, Your Honor, and
well,
I apologize.
Your position isn't that there wouldn't have been an investigation. I gather is that it would have been a different kind of investigation.
Exactly, Judge. Yeah, right? We're not faulting the sheriff's office for doing an investigation. What is faulted is not only is the charges.
When should they have stopped, or what should have happened differently, in your view, if you'd been able to direct everything that night and make sure it was not tainted by any political hostility?
Judge, they shouldn't have held the plaintiffs only for 8 hours, 2 days. Some of them were held for 2 days.
So it's the absence of some people that causes the conclusion of the political motivation.
So if they had just locked down all the officers, it would have been fine.
Well, and had they treated the Post 3 and Post 7 officers who had opened the door to the command post, had they investigated them in the same way, the plaintiffs wouldn't be here. Had they brought administrative charges against them or not brought administrative charges against the plaintiffs here, where Andrews specifically stated that this was political. They removed them from a specialty unit. These are guys that had no discipline in their file. They were like special forces in the military. They loved their jobs. They worked hard for this department. And then to turn around and be treated and suspended. They were the only ones that were suspended that night. And the sheriff put out a press release that these six officers, before they became plaintiffs, participated in the escape for political reasons. They disciplined them. They removed them from a specialty unit. They humiliated them. All of this conduct is in violation of the First Amendment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Durst. Mr. Goulet?
Thank you, Your Honor. I've been through Bonnie Greenstein's statement that was signed by Mr. Gator and initialed several times. The handwriting is tough to get through. But to say in front of this court that it only implicates Mr. Jones is absolutely false. Mr. Jones certainly spoke with Gator per that statement three times, February 1, February 6, February 8. Roberto Rodriguez is identified by Gator as being there and listening to the February 6th conversation regarding this escape. Gene Michno, he comes up in Investigator Janikowski's report as knowing about the escape. Now, Marvin Bailey and Richard Davis, not discussed as being involved in, you know, let's do this and support Remus, but being told by Gator that he spoke with escapee Ernest about the escape, and Ernest told him it's okay, that Ernest is working with Davis and Bailey, and it's in the statement, they're cool with the detainees. Cool with the detainees. Let them do things that they're not supposed to do. Now, maybe that doesn't rise to the level of facilitating this escape, or I should say aiding the escape, but it's certainly something that administratively has to be investigated. And then, you know, as the investigation goes on, you find out Ivan Hernandez knew about a shank that day. Ernest Wright, who's not a defendant, he's not a plaintiff, the captain that called him about that shank, received a 5-day suspension.
So what about these people that Ms. Kurtz kept referring to who didn't get investigated?
She keeps talking about the Post 3 guards. They're not implicated. If the court will remember, the post three guards are the ones that got beaten by belly chains by the detainees as they came surging out of the ABO. They were investigated. Everybody was investigated. I have the ironic position of representing somebody that's a defendant in this case, Mr. Snooks. He actually got a five-day suspension for getting on his cell phone and calling Richard Ramis. This was a wide-ranging investigation. Now, the fact of the matter is, Exhibit 13, that is a affidavit, a three-page affidavit. Talk about pigs and truffles. That affidavit is there, the first top three pages. It says, Investigator Augustiniak says, I'm the one who did the investigation. There was absolutely no influence or coercion by any of the named defendants. I did this according to the general orders. This is what I found.
And well, if we find that there wasn't any waiver, should we remand this thing to Judge Guzman, or should we attempt to sort it all out ourselves?
I would respectfully request that this court try to sort it out itself, because I think the record is full. There's nothing new that would happen down below. Everything is there for the court to rule on this issue. I suspect in one respect, if we go back down, we might get a better order, a better analysis.
Might you have the opportunity, indeed both sides, to supplement what has gone before on the question of the absence or the presence of a material fact?
Well, certainly I'd like to put the criminal transcripts of Darren Gator's trial in front of Judge Guzman if we do go down there.
And how about the evidence, as you suggest, Mr. Goulet, that the sweep of this investigation was perhaps broader?
Sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
And what about the possibility of your submitting evidence that the sweep of this investigation was indeed broader than Ms. Kurtz suggests it was?
On that issue, the court has that evidence. I mean, the fact of the matter is the IAD investigation file is large. But, Mr. Augustiniak talked about that in his affidavit.
Respectfully, Mr. Goulet, this is the Court of Appeals.
Yes.
And we do search records. But the parties below are obliged to refine this on any issue.
And I will say this, a clear reading of our briefing, Judge, where we're specifying something that's in that investigation report, we gave Bates numbers, specific Bates numbers. The documents that the trial court had in front of it were tabbed to the points that we were referring the court to. To just say that we, maybe they pulled it from Pacer, I don't know. But to say that we just dumped this on them is absolutely incorrect and belied by the record. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Goulet. Ms. Kurtz, thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.